Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So with the mindfulness bell, we rest in that silent place within. And we've just affirmed loving kindness within and all around. And so this Sunday, we're going to explore this reach of kindness. Be gentle with ourselves. Be gentle with the world. Be gentle with our heart. To be gentle with our mind. Gentle and kind to our body. To be gentle and kind to our emotions. So we observe what is arising for us today. Not saying that it should be one way or another, but whatever arises, could we love that and be kind to that part of ourselves? This is a day to embrace the life that we've been given. This theme for the month is to befriend the life that we've been given. I would say, could we cherish the life that we've been given? Even though that life might be compromised in certain ways, it might be challenged, could we hold that life as truly sacred for no other reason than it's been given to us? And we smile. What a glorious adventure this life is for all of us. And when you're ready to explore a deeper connection to the moment and to the reality of your being, thank you for the microphone. I feel like I'm projecting out into the world.
You are.
Yeah. So isn't it amazing technology? You can go have a seat, Terry boy. Thank you for ringing the bell. This month I'm speaking about befriending the life that we've been given, and there are no accidents. The first week I spoke about only the heart can enter. And the idea was that we have a mind, and a mind that strategizes and tries to weave a web of meaning and purpose and desire and dreams. And then the trouble with a mind that overly projects into the future is that we get trapped in the dream. One of my teachers early on was a man named Don Miguel Ruiz, who wrote The Four Agreements. And in that, he comes from the Toltec spiritual path. And he says, we're all trapped in what they call the mitote. And the mitote is the dream that the mind creates. And we all know what that looks like. And so when we wake up from the illusion of the dream that we've created, well, then what happens? Well, then we're challenged to create a new dream. And so many of us don't inquire into the dream that we've been raised with, the ideas that we've been handed down. And so this month, no accidents, my Science of Mind magazine arrived, and it's Don Jose Ruiz, which is his youngest son. And it's his testimony on the shamanic path. And I found it truly revealing because he was trapped in the dream of the idea of himself as a shaman, and then through grace, he fell off the pedestal. He went into recovery in the deepest way. You might say that the dream collapsed, and so he was either there to drown or he was to create a new dream. And so I thought this was so fascinating, this lovely article. He says, where are we going to go tomorrow? He asks the question. You know, we're all so concerned about tomorrow. What'll the new job be like? What'll my hips be like when I have a new hip? What'll the country be like now that Ukraine is invading Russia? Well, we can go on and on and on about. And one of the big phrases is, the world is your mind, and the mind is your world. So when we get a new mental equivalent, a new idea, well, then we're creating a whole new world. So that's how he starts. He says, we have all these plans, but really, we don't know when we're going to die, and we don't know where we're going to land, and we don't know anything, and this is what humans are afraid of. We're afraid of not knowing. We're afraid of uncertainty. We're afraid of the unknown. And he says, guess what? That's what we all signed up for. So here's his little sense of humor. Fear dissipates and transforms into freedom when we return to the path of the shaman. The shaman is one who connects to spirit in everything. You might say it's the mystic who recognizes that there's only one here, Mr. Seamus. So, to the path of the shaman and become receptive to Mother Earth's message. And her message is this. You don't have to plan your life to be happy because you're already there. And then in that sacred moment, the path of the shaman is one of gratitude that you get to be with yourself for the rest of your time on this planet. Miss Tia, you get to be with that beautiful otter for the rest of this life on this planet. And he says, isn't that great? He says, you are the love of your life. You are the one that you've been waiting for. So could we, with all of our diminishments, with all of our compromises, with all of our programming, could we say, yeah, this is the life that I've been given, and I'm going to befriend it. No, I'm going to cherish it. I'm going to love it. And so what do you think life did to this young man? It threw him off the pedestal. He says, Ruiz confides that he struggled with substance abuse in his teens. He became more serious about his dissipated path in the 20s. But he had to undergo a root canal due to past choices that he'd made, and nerves in his mouth caused a swelling that blocked his eyesight for 3 weeks, leaving him essentially blind. So through his dissipated behavior, he found himself blind. He said, I felt pain, desperation, and surrender, he says. And I realized that I could not see with my eyes anymore, but I could feel with my hands, and I could feel with my heart, and I could feel the vibrations around me just like a bat does. And when he was a little boy, his spirit animal that his father gave him was the bat. So now he's blind like the bat, but he has this other capacity to navigate in his world. So here is this life that you would say was highly compromised, but he's finding the grace in it. So he said, during all those years of pain, my eyes had been loyal to me, he says. And that's when the Toltec training really began. Toltec means the artist of the spirit. And in their tradition, there is nothing to learn except what takes us away from our inspiration. If all of life is inspiring, well, then where do you get distracted? And I would venture to say it's through worry, through anxiety, through projection, through a whole other narrative that you're telling yourself, and you're not finding the inspiration of the moment. That's his big epiphany. He says, we are artists of the spirit. Nothing to learn except what lies away, takes us away from our inspiration. So the journey, the journey to unconditional love is the gift that blindness gave me, and forgiveness paved my way. He says, addiction, Ruiz says, it's not about the chemicals or the other addictions that I have. I began noticing it's not the substance that was the problem, he shares. It was me who was addicted to my own suffering, and so I needed these other ways to escape from my suffering. It wasn't the substance of alcohol or my lifestyle. It was running away from myself. But guess what? Everywhere I went, there I was. I couldn't escape me. So could we learn to fall in love with the life that we've been given, even in its compromised state, and find the grace? Now, he went blind in order to find it. Well, I don't think we have to go to that extreme, do we, Anastasia? He goes on to say this. Ruiz has felt deep kindness from all. Oh, he goes around now and he spreads his message, blind and talking about to love the light that you've been given. And he says, everywhere I go, he says, they welcome me with their into their homes. They give me food. And it is one of the most beautiful things I can experience. Everywhere in the world I go, people are kind to me. And they're walking their talk. And guess what? People are the same everywhere. He's experiencing his sense of oneness in the kindness that he's finding in the world. But he found the kindness in the world because first he found kindness for himself. So it all has to start with self. Could I be filled with loving kindness? Could I be well? Could I be peaceful and at ease? And then guess what? I'll be happy. And then, since we're not separate in this oneness, could I extend that to the world? Could you be filled with loving kindness? And once we've extended it to the world, because there's only one here, then could we all be filled with this same kindness? And could that be our MO in the world? To be kind, you know, to the plants. This Ming Aurelia, she bit the dust. We did everything to save her life. We transplanted her. We took her out. And finally, we learned to let her go. But then guess what? There was a new Ming Aurelia waiting in the wings to come on. And so Adam ordered it. She came this week. We planted the little Ming Aurelia. So now we have a new little life to nurture. Yeah. So that's, there's a book by Aman Matwani, and it's called You Can Change the World. And he discovered you change the world by seeing the world differently. And so in his book, You Can Change the World, he talks about three essential shifts that we get to take. The first shift is instead of projecting into the future, someday I'll, when the world's the way I want it to be, no, you meet the world on the world's terms, right where it is, with all the anxiety, with all the confusion, with all the seeming breakdowns in systems. So the first shift is you accept life on life's terms right where we are right now. The second shift is when you look out at somebody out there, you don't look at the appearance, you see what's inside the person. Every Sunday when I drive to the center, I leave the house around 7:30, and I go down by Star Market where I take a left on California and head on down here. There's a mother and a daughter that sit there every day, and they leave religiously at 8 a.m., and they were there this morning. And when I practicing how I can change the world, could I see the goodness in these two women? Could I see the love that they have for one another? I think it's a mother and daughter. They leave together. They come together. They just happen to be down on their luck, and they wait there in their sweet way. So I get to change it by seeing the wholeness within the two of them. And then the third shift is you see the potential and the possibility in the world out there. You don't say, ain't it awful? You know, it's going to hell in a handbasket. You say, maybe this is how the world changes. By meeting the shadow, by meeting the darkness, by telling the truth. You know, there's so much around the LGBT community, and I find it so courageous, being that it's Gay Pride Month, that they're standing up and they're saying, I'm going to be seen. I'm not a threat. You know, I just want to be pretty. If I put on a dress, it's not because I'm trying to convert the children. It's just because I find that this is who I am as a person. So by their willingness to be seen, they no longer have to hide in the shadows. So what if we could start right there in our own backyard with the very thing that we think is an obstacle could be the opportunity for us to see things in a different way. It's not that the world has to change. It's that we get to see it in a new light. So I read the book, You Can Change the World, and then I went to Richard Rohr, one of my heroes. He wrote a book of meditations. It's called Yes and every single day is a yes to life. Every single day, no matter what life brings you. And so at the end of the book, he wrote a little thing about how we can keep growing at whatever age we are. It never stops. And this is what he said. Until you forgive and include all of the parts, every part belonging, every part forgiven, even the tragic parts now seem were necessary lessons in this lifetime. Anybody have a few of those necessary lessons that they're growing through? He said, you cannot come home until you've forgiven. You cannot be free until you've forgiven. So the full gift of the final journey is discovering that you're already home. You're already there in the midst of whatever challenges we're going through. He says, I hope you have seen it at last. Some of the elders in our lifetime, Raul is an elder. He's going through so much stuff, and he never complains because this is grace. See, they are at home in their bodies, they're at home in their lives, and they're at home in their minds. No matter what their bodies might be doing, no matter what their minds might be narrating, Miss Paula, and no matter what their emotions might be going on, I can be home in this life, even as crazy as it is. So he goes on to say, when you succeed at your real task, or what I like to call the task within the task, then wherever God leads you, it doesn't really matter. Home is no longer a geographic place. It is the place where everything belongs. Everything can be held, and everything is another lesson. Everything is another gift. He says, the elder grow from everything, even and especially their failures. We learn to grow from our failures. We don't make them wrong. Isn't that a lovely way to approach life? Not saying that you're a winner or a loser, but sometimes when you fail, when you lose, when you don't succeed, that's exactly what you needed in order to grow. You know, so many of us have relationships, and then we create this starry-eyed idea of what the relationship was, and then the relationship doesn't work out, and we bemoan the fact, and then through grace and aging, you begin to see maybe it wasn't meant to work out the way I thought it should have. And by it working out the way it did, it set me free from an illusion, from a matote, from a dream that I would never be free from had I not failed at that thing. So then our failures become crazy successes in a strange sort of way. And then life becomes the great gift that we've been given. So the second week I spoke about, could we trust that life will give us exactly what we need on this journey? You heard me share that that sermon came right after I was taken to the emergency room in an ambulance because my blood pressure had dropped to 50 over 30 because I was abusing my body by not listening to my body. I wasn't being gentle and kind to myself. I was forcing myself to move through the pain that my body was giving me as a messenger to slow down and stop. But I was saying, you can move through the pain. You can push through the pain. And the more I pushed through the pain, well, then I literally collapsed. And when I saw the doctor this week, he says, you know, you brought this on yourself, don't you? I said, yeah, I do. Because I wasn't slowing down. I wasn't listening. I was trying to beat myself into some kind of idea that I could control the physical challenge that I had in that moment, instead of listening to the body when it was trying to say, you need to be kind to yourself, mister. And so now I get to explore that this last Sunday of the month. What is the reach of kindness for myself? Could I be gentle and kind? Could I let go of the need to be in control and have all the answers? Could I be humble enough to be teachable? And then you hear the Beatitudes that Jesus taught. Blessed are the poor in spirit, the ones who don't have to have all the answers, for they shall be guided from within. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So could I find the purity of my heart? I'm speaking about kindness, and you know, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, he said his religion was kindness. And so I pulled out the big Dalai Lama Bible at home, and what His Holiness the Dalai Lama talks about is cultivating what the Buddhists call bodhicitta, which is when the heart and the mind come together as one. So you're not denying the mind with its brilliant ideas and its theories and philosophies and its resonating fields of resonance or whatever, but you're bringing that mind and the compassionate heart together in the bodhicitta. So then your thoughts are loving thoughts, nurturing thoughts, not thoughts so much about me and what my strategy is to control my life and create the illusion of a better matote, but to love the life that I've been given with its challenges. You know, my beloved Raul, and having so many challenges, and he's succeeding in so many ways, but then there are consequences sometimes to the remedy for the solution to the problem. And in a sweet kind of dialogue that he and I are having is, could we see the grace in this too? This too is good. This too is for me. And I'm demanding to see the blessing in the challenges that we have right now. Well, then life becomes this glorious adventure. I'm learning to live with my hip, Miss Susan. And I don't think I'll need a hip replacement quite yet because I'm learning to be kind to it, instead of abusing it like I was doing. And so then life changes when we change the way we approach life. Is it that simple? I think it is. Could we approach it as a glorious adventure? In fact, that was what Helen Keller said. She said, what is life but a glorious adventure? If it's not that, well, then it's not really worth living. So if a blind, deaf woman can claim life as a glorious adventure, well, maybe it's time for us to start seeing it in a different way. Yeah, and so then life gives us these roadblocks, these hurdles, these challenges, these opportunities for us to redefine how we're going to respond. Through Jean Ann's encouragement, I found a new hero, and his name is Matt Kahn. And Matt Kahn wrote a very beautiful book. It's called Whatever Arises, Love That. And he says we can't be healed until we can meet the angry one. He has this beautiful little meditation when the angry one comes and screaming and stomping his feet. And he says to the angry one, oh, come on in. You can scream, you can stomp your feet, you can point your finger at everybody, and you know what? I'm going to listen to you. And yes, I know that you're upset and you projected all these ideas how people should behave, and in your mind, they aren't behaving. And so what did he do? He took that little angry, hurt soul, and he loved him. And this is how he explains what happens when you just love the little angry one. He said, best of all, when love can be invited to work through us and respond on our behalf, well, then we don't even need to know why things have occurred. Something pissed you off, got you upset. You don't need to figure out why. You just need to love that little individual. All that is required is a willingness to open your heart to that little wounded, upset self that somehow you think is off-center. With every step forward into a new spiritual paradigm, you are able to celebrate the arrival of heart-centered consciousness, that's that bodhicitta, while holding a sacred space for the ascension of earth and the awakening of humanity. He says we're not separate from each other, from the earth, from humanity, but guess what? It has to start with the widow self. You can't love the world and humanity if you can't love your own widow self, Miss Paula. So it starts at home. Could I be filled with loving kindness for that little wounded one? Could I be well, knowing that she is doing the best she can with what she has? Could she be peaceful and at ease? That's what I asked Raoul to find in the midst of all the itching and scratching. Could we find that peace? And in that, well, there's a kind of an acceptance, to accept life on life's terms, and that this is yet another growth opportunity. So he says, this last little bit, the importance of cultivating unconditional love for ourselves is the essential stage in the completion of our journey here on earth. Whether manifesting a soulmate, healing our body, seeking liberation from suffering, or integrating past realizations into a fully embodied state of being, each spiritual milestone swiftly finds its way to us once love has been invited into our life. No matter what the area, the soulmate, the career, the physical challenges, the sense of belonging in the world, it all comes together once love is present. We don't have to be fixated on the outcome. Last paragraph, he says, this is the dawning of your highest potential. It is the emergence of your soul into the beauty of human form. Remember, we are a soul with a body, not a body with a soul. And when we know that this soul is deathless and eternal, well, then we can relate to the soul in our animals when they make their transition. You know your little dog is always going to be with you, Miss Paula. I just promise you that. Your mother and dad are always going to be with you, Seamus. Always, I promise you. Mine are haunting me. It is the emergence of your soul into the beauty of human form, and it is the long-awaited fulfillment of your divine destiny. Your destiny comes through your soul emerging, because the soul wants to express. The ego wants to impress and get the world's validation, but the soul just needs to express itself. That's why it runs around in the garden to see the butterflies, because those are our relatives, Miss Jean. I had a hummingbird drinking at me and looking and went swifting right past my head. And for the spiritual growth of all who inhabit our magnificent planet, it is the love revelation that begins with ourselves. A love revelation. Is that too big, Miss Mary, to be a part of a love revelation, that it's all connected? And when you see it all as a part of your own self, well, then you're just being kind to your own self because we're not separate. This is the whole idea. Many blessings for our journey will then come ahead because this is only the beginning. Whatever arises, we get to love that because now we see clearly. We're no longer denying certain things and affirming other things. If it shows up, it's because it's there to be loved. It's there to be healed. It's there to be seen. Pam Hurdy was telling me that she teaches an integrative yoga class, and the basic question is, whatever arises, you say, tell me more. And if it's sadness, tell me more. If it's fear, tell me more. If it's anger, tell me more. If it's confusion, tell me more. And then you hear Rumi, who says, I am astounded, lucid confusion. Yes, I'm confused, but it's very clear that the mind is confused, but there's something underneath it that can say, maybe I need to be confused in order to get clarity. So when the confusion comes, we don't push it away. We say, what is the confusion showing me about life? It shouldn't be so difficult, should it, at this stage? So when life gives us an opportunity to grow and change, could we be teachable enough to say, you know, Karen Drucker wrote a lovely song called No is the New Yes. When I can say no to something that is no longer serving me, I'm really saying yes to something that wants to emerge. So then everything is included, even the no of life. I'm saying no to this less than skillful pattern of trying to control you, Miss Michelle, because God knows I could never control you. And then in that letting go of control, well, then I'm free to let you be who you are. What if it's that simple? Then when we let go of the me person that's running the show, that has to have the idea what it should look like, who wants to have everything certain and known, and then step into that unknown place that Don Jose was talking about, well, then I'm living the life that I've been given. I love it just the way it is. It's unfolding for me in its own sacred, sweet, sweet way. So let's see, where are we going with this? Dave Seabrook, will you go ring the bell once for me? I'm going to do a little meditation because I feel like going in. Welcome home, by the way. You notice how he's moving like a live. My prayer partner said to me, he said, I'm almost 80. And he says, when I get out of bed, I used to think I'm a 25-year-old and I could leap out of bed. He says, but now when I get up, my body's kind of stiff. I noticed when you were walking to the bell, there's a stiffness in your walk. Could I embrace the stiffness in my walk instead of trying to be 25 when I'm close to 65? You can ring the bell, sweet Dave. There you go. The bell. It calls us to stop and to observe life, our life, this sacred life that's right here, right now, sitting in this room. Observe what kind of relationship you're having with this life that you've been given. Are you being kind to this individual that represents you on planet Earth? Or are you kind of controlling and critical and wanting this individual to conform to an idea? Just observe. And now I would invite you to say to this lovely individual that is representing you here on planet Earth, I love you and I accept you just the way you are. Don't change a hair for me, not if you care for me. Just be who you is and not who you ain't. Because if you is who you ain't who you is. And so we confer a blessing upon this lovely life that we've been given, just the way it is. We don't have to fit some kind of crazy idea that it should look a certain way, that we should have achieved a certain amount of success or fame or fortune. None of that really matters in the greater scheme of things. What does matter is who we become. So notice this individual that represents you here on planet Earth. Is this individual kind? Notice how you are with yourself. Do you say the word should a lot? Or have you stopped shitting on yourself? Notice how you are in relationship to your body. When your body has a challenge, can you learn to adjust so that it can adapt? How are you with your mind? Are you kind to your mind? You know, the mind can be a horrible master, but it can be a wonderful servant. So is the mind something that we are kind to? When the mind wants to run away with some crazy thought patterns, can we thank the mind for sharing when it has a hissy fit? Thank you for sharing. Tell me more. And in the willingness to listen to the mind when it's on steroids, well, then the mind feels heard. Thank you for sharing. I understand there's concern, and I am here for you. And so as we practice kindness with our mind, well, then our mind stops screaming at us. Now let's observe the emotions that arise, the feelings. Someone said to me once a long time ago that emotions are just energy in motion. So that energy is moving through us, and sometimes that emotion might be sadness. Could I open to the sad one, comfort him when he's sad? There's an angry one. Could I acknowledge, ah, there you are, my little angry one? And in embracing the angry one, being kind to the angry one, well, then the angry one feels heard and seen, and he no longer has to stomp his feet and have a hissy fit, because I hear you and I'm here for you. So we observe all the many aspects of the self, the little local self. At kindness, we set ourselves free to love again. And imagine Jesus, who said to love one another, who said God is love. And when we are loving, we are being godlike. And so we start by loving this moment, just as it is. And we shift into loving the inner self, that is harmonious and gentle and kind. We begin to experience that true nature of our own bodhicitta, that loving presence within ourselves. And as we experience this loving presence within ourselves, well, we see it in the world, because the world truly is a mirror of our own self. And so Jesus, in his wisdom, said to love the enemy. Because if you've projected the enemy onto something outer, well, then you are separating yourselves. But when you know that there's only one here, well, then we've made an enemy within ourselves that we're projecting out into the world. So in this holy instant, could we be kind and loving to that which we've called enemy? Now, through this act of kindness, could we envision a world that Don Jose Ruiz found, where everybody is doing the best they can, walking their own walk, and experience the kindness reflected back all around us, because we are kind ourselves. When I am filled with loving kindness, when I am well, when I am peaceful and at ease, well, then I radiate this natural joy that we could call happiness. It's always an inside job. And then when we locate that beautiful oasis of heaven, that kingdom of heaven within us, well, then the practice is practicing heaven. In heaven, we see heaven all around us, because everything is an aspect of our own self. So the heaven in me meets the heaven in you, knowing that all there is this consciousness of wholeness, consciousness of harmony, consciousness of loving kindness. And when I am filled with loving kindness, well, then I am well. I am peaceful and at ease. And I create happiness within and all around, because there's only one here. So breathe in that awareness. And anchor yourselves in this sacred moment of now. You've shifted out of a futuristic desire to have something tomorrow into the realization that all we have is now. And then we've shifted. Instead of looking at the outer circumstance, we find this inner place of wholeness, this inner place of repose. And then instead of looking at the world's problems as something to be fixed, we now see the possibility of heaven on earth because we found heaven right there at the core of our being. It's all an inside job. And we have arrived. We are home in the peace that passes all understanding, in a love that knows no other, because there is no other here. There's only one, loving itself. And we begin to experience the majesty, the mystery, the simplicity, and the beauty of this one life, one love, endlessly unveiling itself with every breath. And we get to choose kindness as our religion. Take a deep breath. Give an exhale. And let's join by placing our hands on our heart and say with me, I honor you.
I respect you.
I love you.
You
are the light of the one,
shining within.
Shining all around.
And we witness you.
We celebrate you.
We honor you.
We give thanks for this beautiful life that we've been given.
All of it.
All of it.
All of it is sacred.
And we love what is.
And so it is.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.